Hello and welcome to the SearchStorage.com webcast Scaling SANs. My name is Dana Brundage and I'll be your moderator. Joining me today is Greg Schultz. Greg is a senior analyst with the independent storage analysis firm, the Evaluator Group, Inc., and authored the book Resilient Storage Networks. Greg?
Great. Thank you, Dana. Let's jump right to slide number 2 and set the stage for what we're going to talk about during this webinar event today. So as we look at slide number 2, our agenda, we're going to take a look at scaling storage networks, and specifically a couple of items on why to scale, what does scaling mean. Scaling can mean different things to different people for different applications, including increasing the number of ports, increasing performance, as well as scaling over distance. So we're going to take a look at a couple of different options for scaling. We'll take a look at some examples, some technologies, as well as some techniques, and we'll move into some various examples towards the end. So again, what we're going to cover will be why there's a need to scale, how big can you scale a storage network, some technology options and techniques, as well as how to scale with some redundancy and performance tips as we go. So let's move on to our third slide, which will pretty much get us started for the day here, now that we got the agenda and formalities out of the way. So why scale a storage network? Well, as we take a look at this slide, we take a look at some of the various reasons and benefits for scaling a storage network. Shown on the right-hand side of the slide are various icons, images, and symbols that will be used throughout the webinar today to indicate different things. For example, storage systems, tape, disk arrays and libraries, servers, switches, gateways, and even partitioned switches, which we'll talk more about. Some of the reasons for scaling storage network include performance, both from a bandwidth as well as latency, to support more users, applications, as well as growth. Capacity of ports is important. In other words, how many ports can you add as part of a storage network to support the server storage consolidation, as well as data center and SAN island consolidation. Scaling over distance comes into play to support business continuance, disaster recovery, as well as to support a resilient infrastructure environment, and more recently, a focus on regulatory and compliance issues. Another reason for scaling storage networks is management. The consolidation of different environments to simplify, to do more with less, to support fewer components, both from a hardware, software, and a networking standpoint. In a nutshell, to reduce the complexity, yet while scaling with robustness. So we'll move on to our next slide and take a look at some of the evolution of storage networks. And we'll just touch on this slide real briefly. We're not going to go into the benefits of storage network. There's enough other material that covers that topic that you can find on Search Storage. But what this slide takes a real quick look at is the evolution from dedicated direct attached storage on the left to shared storage, the shift into shared storage, first generation storage networks, and what we see over on the left are multi-fabric redundant storage networks. And what we've seen with the proliferation of storage networks is also the proliferation of what are called dedicated fabrics or SAN islands. In other words, one or more fabrics, one or more switches configured for redundancy, but isolated from other fabrics, isolated from other switches. So we'll take a little bit closer look at that, both the reasons why that took place, as well as some alternatives over the next couple of slides here. Okay, so again, I'm going to skip the discourse on the benefits of storage networking in the interest of time, as again, you can find that on Search Storage, and I'm sure most any vendor would love to expound on the reasons for migrating to a storage network. So as we move to our next slide, we're going to take a look at some of the various scaling techniques, both on a local and on a remote basis. And two concepts that I'd like to chat with you about for a little bit are that of vertical scaling as well as horizontal scaling. Vertical scaling and horizontal scaling are not unique approaches to storage networks. They apply equally to whether you're dealing with storage, whether you're dealing with servers, or just switches or networking in general. The basic idea behind vertical scaling is that various size types of switches, are supported. In a nutshell, vertical scaling means taking a single entity and scaling its size, whether it's scaling its performance, scaling the amount of capacity, but it's taking a single instance. So, for example, in a storage network, vertical scaling would be shifting from an 8-port switch to a 16, 32-port switch or to a 128 or even a 256-port director as a single device. In other words, not multiple switches networked together. An analogy in the storage device world would be a large frame, a large storage device that you could add more drives to and keep scaling the performance, the number of I/O supported, the amount of capacity supported, or as a server, a bigger, faster processor, a bigger, faster server. The other one we want to chat about is that of horizontal scaling. The idea of horizontal scaling is to be able to scale beyond the size of a single switch, a single server, a single storage device. And some reasons for horizontal scaling would be, again, to scale beyond that of a single device, but also for redundancy, as well as to scale distance, to span sites. So horizontal scaling could involve using multiple smaller components, multiple smaller switches as an example, and networking those together to span distance or to support redundancy. So in the storage network world, commonly this would be called a switched fabric or a storage network or SAN, with two or more switches configured in various topologies. Multiple segments, in other words, unique fabrics, can also exist locally or over distance for business continuance. In the case of multiple segments, this is something relatively new in the storage network world, is the idea of using a router to be able to physically connect different isolated fabrics, yet leave them logically isolated. And we'll talk more about that in a little bit. Some examples of a vertical scale are shown on this particular slide with examples from Brocade, Cisco, McData, QLogic, and Emulex in terms of various devices, some technology evolution. So let's move on to our next slide. And as a part of our next slide, we're going to continue our discussion on vertical scaling and horizontal scaling by showing you a couple different examples of what this idea means of vertical and horizontal scaling. You could think of horizontal scaling quite simply as networking or clustering or aggregating multiple smaller devices together. Just think of vertical scaling as the various size devices. So as we see on this particular slide, vertical scaling is scaling the capacity of a single device. So for example, you could use a larger port count switch in a fabric to reduce the number of individual switches, reduce the number of ISLs, to essentially consolidate. So think of vertical scaling as a way of facilitating consolidation using a larger device, like a larger switch. The idea with horizontal scaling, again, is to be able to span distances, to be able to support redundancy, but also to scale beyond a single individual device capability. So as we see across the bottom of this particular slide is, for example, two switches using inter-switch links or ISLs configured in a cascade or configured in a triangle circular type fashion using a ring type topology, a full mesh core edge. There are there are several different approaches, several different topologies, techniques, as well as various permutations of these. In fact, I put a plug in my book, I believe it's chapter 9. There's a whole chapter just on topologies that could be used for different configurations, different applications. And that's key. What topology to use is dependent on what your needs are, what your requirements. Are you configuring for distance, for availability, for performance, for redundancy? So there's a lot of different permutations that you can utilize to meet and align with your particular needs. Up on the top right side of this particular slide, we see the example of vertical scale, seeing a small type switch and increasingly larger type switches. And right there in the middle are a couple little bullet points, factoids, if you would, such as you could have up to 239 domains per fabric. And what is a domain? A domain could be a switch, or a domain could be a logical partition of a switch. You could also have up to 256 ports per domain, which means that there are roughly 61,000 possible ports per fabric. And you can also have multiple fabrics. So you may hear people talking about how fiber channel particular SANs can scale into the millions of ports. Well, that's only possible if you create multiple fabrics and then interconnect those different fabrics with routing. But the point I want to make here is that you can scale quite large. However, the question then should arise, how big is practical? And that's going to depend on your particular implementation, your environment, as well as the technology you're using and what the particular vendor that you're working with support in terms of the number of switches connected, how big those switches can be, how many ports they'll actually support in a fabric from a practical tested implementation. So you've got the theoretical numbers, the specifications, if you would, and then there's the real-world practical limits. And that's where I'd recommend confer with your solution providers as well as your vendors as to what they'll actually support and stand up by. They'll like to tell you what the speeds and feeds, the maximums are, but ask them what will they stand up and support you with. So let's move on to our next slide. Now we've had a chance to talk a little bit about vertical and horizontal scaling. Hopefully that makes sense. And again, vertical scaling and horizontal scaling have been positioned as competitive in the past by some vendors. In other words, vendors with smaller switches will tend to promote horizontal scaling, taking multiple switches and networking those together as a way to compete against, say, a vendor with a larger switch. Conversely, a vendor with a larger switch, for example, a fiber channel FICON director, will position the vertical scaling attributes as the best way. In other words, to eliminate the complexity. The reality is, vertical and horizontal scaling are very, very complementary. It really shouldn't be seen as a one versus the other technology. In other words, how can you combine the different technologies to scale? So we're going to talk a little bit more about vertical scaling from a performance standpoint. And as we look at this particular slide, a key idea is it's not the number of ports that you want to be concerned with. While that's important from a physical attachment standpoint, you want to be concerned with what is the performance, and particularly, what is the blocking or the congestion? What is the actual throughput through that particular switch? So in other words, you could have a switch with a large port count, but if you don't have the bandwidth to be able to support all those ports at their particular speeds, you could run into what's called a oversubscription or congested or a blocking type condition. In other words, where there's more traffic than available bandwidth. Just think of it as trying to get onto the freeway during rush hour where you have lots of on-off ramps, but the freeway itself is congested. You need that bandwidth to move the traffic. So in the storage world, the basic design premise historically has been designed for no congestion, designed for performance, designed to avoid things like blocking, congestion, designed to prevent oversubscription. The idea being is deterministic performance, low latency, high performance bandwidth from a storage perspective. On the networking world, on the other side, though, a major design premise is interoperability, ease of use, relatively low cost. And one of the ways to achieve that is to leverage over subscription. So something that's relatively new to the storage networking world is the convergence of these two different philosophies. In other words, the over-engineered, guaranteed type performance of a storage interface versus the flexibility, the interoperability, the relative ease of use of traditional networks. Hence the idea of storage networks, the convergence. Well, something that's rather new and rather controversial is leveraging some of the ideas from the networking world that, for example, not all servers will operate at full performance. Take, for example, a group of servers. In the slide, if we look on the left, we've got servers on the top that all attach to a fiber channel switch. All those servers have, say, 2 gig fiber channel attachments. Those could be single attached or dual attached for redundancy. But in this particular example on the left, all the servers, the switch has full bandwidth. It's a non-blocking, mean that there's full any-to-any port bandwidth. All ports can communicate with other ports with no blocking, no loss of performance, no degradation. Now, the trade-off for that is a higher cost to get that full-type performance. So as we look on the right, this is something relatively new, is the idea that the premise that not all servers will operate at their full speed. So, for example, you might have a 2-gig adapter on a server, but that server might only be running maybe 20 megabytes per second per port, or maybe 40 megabytes per second, or maybe even something lower like 10 to 15 meg per second, megabytes that is, excuse me. So the basic premise is, which is used in the networking world quite regularly, is that not all servers require 100% of the bandwidth. So in this particular example, some servers attach, all the servers, for example, have a 2-gig adapter fiber channel. However, the switch is designed, or at least some ports on the switch, maybe not all of them, but some ports are designed to be oversubscribed. So, for example, instead of allowing all the ports to have full 2-gig throughout the switch to any port, they share a common interconnect into the switch, into the core, if you would. So, for example, as we see on the right, in the dotted circled area, four host ports actually share a 2.5 gigabit back-end port. So what that means is that you've got an oversubscription of 4 times 2, or roughly 8 gigabits, to 2.5 gigabits, or roughly a little right around 4 to 1, not quite 4 to 1 oversubscription. Now, traditionally, that's something you just don't do in the storage world, because you essentially designed for to avoid oversubscription, to avoid these sorts of scenarios. But what's controversial is leveraging this approach, the idea that you could attach different servers with different speeds. So in this particular scenario, you could have some servers attached to full speed ports and your slower speed servers attached to the shared bandwidth ports. So the trade-offs here is it's a lower cost. However, you have the potential for performance congestion if you don't manage what servers and what workload, what bandwidth you attach to these different ports. Again, somewhat controversial. Traditional storage thinking is you just don't do things like these. The networking world, it's, that's what you've done for years with servers. So this is something that it's an option. It's a capability to reduce cost. If you think of it in terms of your tiering the access. In other words, similar how you have tiered storage, fiber channel, and SATA. With this sort of approach, something that, for example, Cisco calls a host-optimized port, you can actually have your high-performance 2-gig, 4-gig type ports and your shared bandwidth or host-optimized oversubscribed ports for slower servers at a lower cost per port. It comes down to what fits into your particular environment. What are your management philosophies? What are your design principles and so forth? You may find it simpler just to have all full speed ports at a higher cost, just to simplify the management of keeping track of what servers attached to what ports. On the other hand, you might find that there's a benefit to not treating all ports, all attachments the same. In other words, in the spirit of a tiered service type environment where you have tiered access, tiered connectivity, tiered protection, and tiered storage. So there's a couple of points there. There's a couple different options in terms of scaling vertically, as well as some things to watch out for. So let's move on to our next slide and continue our discussion about performance. Another area that we want to talk about when it comes time to scaling. So we mentioned vertical scaling is creating a larger device. So we want to be concerned about not just simply having lots of ports, but as we talked about in the previous slide, is we want to make sure we have bandwidth. And is that full bandwidth or is it shared bandwidth? Is it non-blocking, meaning no congestion, no performance degradation, or is it oversubscribed or is it a combination? Okay. So one of the things we want to look at, and something that's becoming more popular, is the idea of fanning in or aggregating for performance for consolidation purposes. For example, you've got a switch that supports 4 gigabit bandwidth, and maybe you even have a storage device that supports 4 gig bandwidth. yet your servers are maybe a mix of 1 gig, 2 gig, maybe even some 4 gig servers starting to attach. So the idea is that you could attach those different speed servers, essentially consolidate your different server ports onto a switch, aggregate, and share a storage device. So in this particular example, we see that on the right, a storage volume with various LUNs, LUN A, LUN B, LUN C, that are each mapped to server A, server B, server C, respectively. Now, in this particular example, we'll assume that there is a single, for say, 4-gig link between the switch in the middle and the storage device on the right. And we'll assume that the different servers have different speeds. Maybe server A is 4 gig, server B is 2 gig, server C is 1 gig. And we're going to assume that it's a full-speed, non-blocking switch. So in other words, we're not dealing with host-optimized ports like we just talked about on the previous slide, but this is full bandwidth capability. However, the different servers using their different fiber channel speeds, for example, 4 gig, 2 gig, 1 gig, the different I.O. frames are going to traverse through the switch and arrive at the storage device using that shared single 4-gig port to the storage device. What can happen is something referred to as head-of-line blocking, or HOLB, which results from slower traffic converging at that common port, common point, and that traffic blocking or slowing down other traffic. Again, I'll use the freeway analogy, good or bad, is think about you're going down the freeway and you're trying to rush to maybe get to the airport or to go shopping or to get home from work, whatever it might be. And traffic is flowing along real good. All of a sudden, you get into the main traffic jam only to find out that there's a slow-moving vehicle up ahead of you and all the other traffic is bottlenecking behind it, and you see that free, clear road out in front of that slow-moving traffic. That's an example of head-of-line blocking. So the solution, as we move to the next slide, is something that is becoming pretty standard nowadays on switches, is the idea of implementing something referred to generically as virtual output queues. This could take on different names by different vendors. And the idea with a virtual output queue is let's segregate the traffic. Okay, so even though they're running on a shared road, a shared traffic path, let's be able to separate the traffic so that if, for example, the frames coming from server A are the fast-moving ones, they want to go really fast because they're running a 4 gig off the server, but yet we have server C that's running at 1 gig, and it has more traffic, it has slower-type traffic, what we want to do is create the illusion that we have different traffic lanes, in other words, different queues. One for server A, one for server B, one for server C. The idea being here, quite simply, is that only traffic for server A will impact traffic for server A. So in other words, if server A issues an I.O. request and that delays other I.O. frames, it's only going to impact that particular server. It's not going to impact server B or C. Likewise, if server C is a slow-moving traffic going through the fiber channel switch, it'll only impact itself. Traffic for server B, traffic for server A is allowed equal access and is allowed to essentially go around and pass that traffic for the slower moving traffic. In some environments, you'd probably wish that you had the same idea of a virtual output queue maybe on the freeways. It could really address some bottlenecks of slower moving traffic. Again, a year or so ago, this was something relatively new. Today, it's pretty much jacks or better. In other words, a common feature across switches. But a good one to talk to your vendors about. Ask them if they have the issue or how do they address convergence of traffic, particularly if you're in an environment where you're going to use 4 gigabit fiber channel for aggregating multiple slower servers. Something to be aware of. Okay, so let's move on to our next slide. Now we've talked about a couple ideas, a couple concepts involving performance around vertical scale. And let's talk about another capability around vertical scaling, and that is the idea of a logical switch. What some vendors will call LPARs, what some will call logical domains, some will call it switch partitioning. It'll go by different names. And the key point here is not to confuse the logical switch, the logical domains, the LPARs, with the idea of a virtual fabric or a segmented or a routed network or something like a vSAN type technology. In other words, where you create a virtual fabric. The idea of the example we're looking at here is where you have, for example, a 256-port, maybe 128-port switch, and you have the ability to subdivide that on some granularity, whether it's by switch port blades or by groups of ports. But the idea being very, very similar to partitioning or creating domains on a large server or a large storage device, where you can subdivide and essentially create logical switches, each with their own different unique domain ID that could be all part of the same fabric or different fabrics. Okay? So in this example here, we see three different fabrics, one for development, one for internal production, one for external production. And what we've done is we've taken, as an example, a large port count switch, maybe a 256-port or a 512-port type switch, and we've carved up some number of ports and allocated those across the different fabrics. So, for example, the development SAN might have 128 ports, while the production SAN might have, for internal use, might have another 128 ports, and the external production might have 256 ports. These different logical partitions might be running different firmware. One might be supporting fiber channel traffic. One might be supporting FICON traffic. And another one might be supporting mixed fiber channel and FICON traffic, something referred to as protocol intermix or PIM. So the idea being is that we can take and subdivide the resources to be able to more effectively manage those from a granularity standpoint, as well as a nice easy way if you're starting to consolidate physical switches to be able to physically consolidate the workload yet logically keep them isolated. So again, the different features will vary by vendor implementation. One other point, I'll give you an example where logical partitioning can come into play. As I mentioned earlier, is that in a domain, there can be 256 ports. So if you happen to have a 512-port switch to be able to support, say, FICON or fiber channel, you'd need to divide that into half so you'd have two 256-port domains, okay, or logical switches or LPARs, depending on whose terminology you like to use. So here's an example of simply taking a large port count switch and subdividing it to be able to isolate based on workload, traffic protocols, or management. So let's move on to our next slide. We'll take a look at the performance topic tied to horizontal scaling. And this gets into the idea of inter-switch links, ISLs. Okay? And ISLs could be used to connect multiple switches together to create a larger fabric locally, to be able to span distances for basic connectivity between switches. And this is nothing new to storage networks, to fiber channel. This is an idea that's borrowed from the LAN networking world. The inter-switch links, the ISLs, can be of various speeds, 1 gig, 2 gig, 4 gig, even 10 gig, vendor-specific proprietary 10 gig implementations. But the potential for ISLs, while they're there to improve load balancing, utilization, redundancy, availability, they're also a point for potential performance issues. In other words, you could potentially bottleneck. And there's a couple of ways. From a management perspective, to ease management of ISLs, you can do things such as trunking, which is the aggregation of multiple ISLs, two or more ISLs, and making them look like a single ISL, effectively concatenating or striping, if you want to use an array-type concept, of the bandwidth. Concatenating meaning utilizing all the bandwidth, but not necessarily striping, in other words, spreading the workload across. So you might aggregate the bandwidth, but certain traffic may only balance over one of the ISL members of an ISL group. Okay, so from a management idea, the idea of trunking can really help simplify the management in terms of how much bandwidth do you need, how do you allocate, how do you spread the workload out. Very similar to taking multiple disk drives, aggregating and striping them together and load balancing. However, the caveat being is that if you created a large aggregate or what appears to be a large virtual ISL, simply throwing more traffic, simply allowing more traffic to go through that over that inner switch link, again, whether it's local or remote, could lead to another bottleneck. Let's go back to our freeway analogy. You've got multiple lanes of traffic. They all converge to go under a narrow underpass or through a narrow tunnel or just go through some other choke point. If you're going to have the ISLs, you need to make sure that you've got good bandwidth, but we also need to be concerned about latency. So typically aggregating, trunking is good for bandwidth, but we need to be concerned about that latency so we can let high priority traffic get through. And this may come in involve setting up separate ISLs, one for general purpose traffic, and then maybe a smaller ISL for high speed traffic. The determination, do you go with multiple slower ISLs, 1 gig, 2 gig, 4 gig, versus maybe a single 10 gig, should be looked at in terms of availability, performance, latency, and congestion. While you could eliminate multiple slower links, for example, with a single 10 gig or a single 4 gig to eliminate multiple 1 or 2 gigs, balance that with availability. So, for example, you could use two 2 gig fiber channel ISLs or a single 4 gig. Okay? The two 2 gigs give you some redundancy, such that if you were to lose the link, you'd run degraded, you'd run 50% of your bandwidth, but you still have connectivity. So balance that out. It might be tempting to go with a single 10 gig to replace, say, 5 2 gig ISLs or 10 1 gig ISLs, but balance that from a total cost perspective, but also from an availability, reliability, as well as latency load balancing perspective. Okay, so let's move on. And let's start taking a look at some examples. And our first example we're going to take a look at is a sand island. A lot of sand islands have been deployed, whether they're integrated by customers, whether they've come pre-configured as part of a storage solution. But as we look at this particular slide, as we look from left to right, we see Fabric A, which might be at a remote location, maybe a single fiber channel switch with some servers attached to it, tape and disk. In the middle, we see Fabric B, perhaps at a local site, where we have some number of servers. These could be single attached or dual attached with a pair of fiber channel switches that are cascaded together. So far, each of these is a single fabric because the switches are interconnected. As we look over at on the right, we see Fabric C, another local site. Again, another fabric, even though there's a pair of switches, it's a single fabric. So whenever you have multiple switches attached to each other, that'll create a single fabric unless you've introduced some level of routing capability, which we'll look at as we move now to our next slide. On this next slide, things start to get busy. We start to see a lot of lines, a lot of connections. But as we take a look at our slide here, we see the idea of something called SAN segmentation, also known as SAN routing, or a storage area network or SAN subnet. The idea here is that we have physically connected the different fabrics, Fabric A, Fabric B, and Fabric C, yet they're logically isolated. So, for example, as we look at the slide, there's some numbers in little circles, little annotations, if you would. As we see, moving from left to right, for example, there's a little one there that looks like a little by a brick wall. Think of that as almost like a little firewall, if you would. But Fabric A is connected to the metro area or the wide area network via some sort of router, that little device down towards the lower left with the horizontal dotted lines indicating a router connecting the switch to the metro area. As we see down towards the bottom middle, we see a storage network router, a router that could support connectivity of different SAN segments, Routers are available from vendors such as Brocade, Cisco, McData to be able to do connectivity. In this particular example, so we're connecting Fabric A, Fabric B, and Fabric C. Fabric A via wide area link, Fabric B and C via local area links. So in this example, we've physically connected, yet they're logically isolated. So Fabric A doesn't see any of the traffic on Fabric B. Fabric B doesn't see any of the traffic on Fabric A or C unless we do something, for example, allowing a tape drive in Fabric B to be accessed from some servers on Fabric A. Essentially, we're going to allow routing or access to a particular device from another device. In this case, the servers on Fabric A to access the tape drive on Fabric B. We see some other examples of that as we look over towards the right. We see some other dotted lines. For example, the little circle box number 6, where a storage device in Fabric B is allowed to be accessed by servers or some servers on Fabric C. So effectively what's taking place here is that routing tables are set up on the router. And the routing tables are allowing and defining what servers and what fabric can talk to what storage devices. And to be able to allow this without actually collapsing or creating a single fabric, which is what would happen if we simply connected all these fabrics together with a cable. Whenever you do that, you would actually collapse the fabric. So we need some sort of segmentation, some sort of router to be able to physically interconnect yet logically isolate, similar to what takes place very commonly in a LAN networking type world. Now, down in the lower right, I'm going to show you another example. That router could also be involved for doing protocol conversion. Routers perform three basic functions. One is supporting distance. The other is protocol conversion. For example, enabling iSCSI servers to access fiber channel type devices on the different fabrics, either locally or remotely. And then the third primary function of a router is that to provide segmentation or isolation. Now, that isolation could be to connect these different fabrics, also to support multi-vendor interoperability. So Fabric A could be McData, Fabric B could be Brocade, Fabric C could be Cisco. And using a multi-protocol router that supports interoperability across the different fabrics, or I should say, be able to mask or virtualize that connectivity, provides a layer of abstraction. So again, what we're showing here is physically connected, yet logically isolated. The different fabrics are managed, are transparent to each other. Management traffic is kept local. Things like RSCNs, LIP-type traffic, configuration, switch IDs, domain IDs, switch names, is all kept local, is all kept transparent to support interoperability and consolidation. So let's move on to our next example. So we've talked about routing, and again, SAN segmentation is an example of using horizontal scaling to be able to connect multiple fabrics together, but it's also a management tool to be able to abstract as well as to help manage. This next slide, also a busy picture, but what this is showing is a large dual fabric utilizing vertical and horizontal scaling. The horizontal or the vertical scaling takes place near the core, where large port count, high-performance fiber channel FICON switches or directors are being used to provide redundant connectivity to the servers and the storage devices located in the middle. There's an outer tier out towards the edge across the top and the bottom of various size switches that are used to provide either single or dual attachment of secondary and tertiary type servers to the core fiber channel environment. I'm not going to read through all the speeds and feeds, but this particular example is one of the examples I took out of my book to called Designing Resilient Storage Networks to actually show you how you could scale and how you could actually have two fabrics, Fabric A on top, Fabric B on the bottom, and how you could combine different tiers of servers, servers using 4 gig, 2 gig, 1 gig out towards the edge, higher performance servers using maybe 2 and 4 gig in the middle, along with high performance storage, and having redundant paths. And you can read in the bullet points some of the speeds and feeds in terms of the number of ports supported, the number of devices, various other factoids as a large type example. This example could be all local. You could also span distances by having these fabrics or some of the servers actually span distance across two different sites for high availability, business continuance, disaster recovery purposes. So let's move on to our next example. On kind of a different scaling note, that last example we saw looked at a big fabric, but not everybody needs big fabrics. What we're seeing today are the deployments of more and more blade centers, blade servers. So in this particular example, let's take a look at a blade server. This might be two blade server cabinets, maybe a single one. It might be a single shelf of blades or multiple shelves across multiple blade server cabinets. And this is leveraging the ability now that blade centers, such as those from HP, IBM, and others, now support the idea of a blade switch, as well as blade fiber channel adapters that can be used for connecting to another switch. For example, what we see in the middle, where the blade center switches, or the blade center adapters, attached to an external switch where there's some external storage attached to it. We also see the ability of using, again, a multi-protocol router to be able to allow, say, fiber channel-based blade servers to access iSCSI or other storage resources. Or it could be the other way around. Instead of having fiber channel blades on a blade server, those might be gigabit Ethernet running NAS or running iSCSI going through a fiber channel router or gateway or bridge, also be able to access fiber channel based storage. So this is just a variation of some of the other examples we've seen, but focused a little bit more on for a blade server. Over on the right, again, using multi-protocol routers, gateways, bridges, the ability for various servers that aren't blade servers to be able to access and share a common storage infrastructure and storage resources. So let's move on to our next example. We've got a couple more here to go through. Hopefully this gives you some ideas of some of the things, some of the techniques, some of the different technologies and approaches for scaling for distance, scaling for performance, both in terms of performance, bandwidth, latency, as well as capacity. So we talked about partitioning of switches, logical partitions, domains, logical domains. Here's an example of taking a pair of large port count switches and carving each of those up into three logical switches, logical switch 1, logical switch 2, logical switch 3, across both of the physical switches. And then taking our different workloads, development, internal production, as well as external production, and having redundant paths going to what appears to the servers and the storage devices as individual real switches, where in reality, you've consolidated down. So the previous picture here, this example, might be a total of six physical switches, three physical on the right, three physical on the right, or on the left, excuse me. By consolidating down to a larger port count switch and then logically dividing those, you physically have consolidated your resources, yet you can still manage the individual switches, the individual partitions from a management perspective. So again, development has redundant paths. Production, both internal and external, have redundant paths. And for redundancy, we're using two physical switches. Here's a word of advice or a tip. The temptation might be there. You might be coached by a vendor to go to a single large port count switch, whether it's for a single switch environment, whether it's partitioned or not. Always deploy in pairs, whether it's a single switch, whether it's a large switch, a small switch. Use redundancy. So in this example here, the temptation might be, go to a single switch, partition it up six ways, and have redundant paths going through different six partitions, the different six logical switches. Avoid that. Go with the pair and then subdivide that. So effectively you have the A path, and the B path for each of the servers going through the different switches, whether it's one large switch, non-partitioned on the left and on the right, or a large switch partitioned, as we see in this example. Okay, so let's move on to our next example, which looks similar to what we saw before, but kind of a different variation. In this particular example, we saw in the previous where we take a large port count and we subdivide that, we partition it to allow multiple servers to attach to multiple storage devices. In this example, we're going the other way around, where we have a large port count, large capacity storage device. This could be a large monolithic, cache-centric type storage device. It could be a 4-gig open system storage array with multiple ports on it. In this example, we have multiple smaller ports, and each of the different servers have their redundant path, A and B. And they, in turn, attach into the storage device. So in this example, we're fanning in multiple servers into a large storage device, but increasing the number of ports to that storage device by using switches. You could some way think of this particular slide as a predecessor to the partitioning slide that we saw in the previous example. Okay, so an example here would be using maybe a 4 gigabit fiber channel storage device, such as an IBM DF4800, Ingenio 6998, Storage Tech FLX380 type device that has multiple ports, or an HP EVA 8000 or a HDS AMS500 that have multiple ports. But to be able to increase the number of ports that attach to that is put some number of fiber channel switches, aggregate the traffic, and then connect those. Reminder here is what we saw a couple slides back, head-of-line blocking. We want to make sure that those switches, even though we're aggregating, aren't going to cause any bottlenecks, that we can make sure that we can aggregate those different servers of different speeds and allocate the resources as they appropriate. So let's take a look at our last example. And this next example here is that of a multi-site, a three-site type fabric, using horizontal as well as could be vertical scaling. But in this example, we have two fabrics, Fabric A and Fabric B. And these run between three locations. They could be close together, they could be over long distances. But in this example, for redundancy, each location, the servers and the storage have access via redundant paths to both Fabric A and B. So this could be an example where, for synchronous mirroring, location 1 might synchronously mirror to location 2, for example, from New York, New Jersey. And location 2 could span distances, maybe using fiber channel over IP, FCIP, IFCP, maybe a sonnet link, and go over a longer distance where location 3 could be, say, in Chicago, such that for local, location 1 and 2 could use synchronous type mirroring, synchronous replication over a dedicated fiber optic link using a dense wave division, DWDM wave division, WDM wave division multiplexing, where both location 1 and 2 could then span distances, say, out to Chicago at location 3, using wide area and metro area, wide area connectivity, again, using IP, storage over SONET. For more information about spanning distances, let me mention, take a look at the search storage tip called Bridging the Gap, as well as the Storage Magazine article called Bridging the Gap, that specifically takes a look at the different techniques and technologies for spanning distances support storage. So, let's start to wrap up here. As we go to our next slide here, let's talk real quickly about some general design topics, make some linkage here, some things to consider as we start to wrap up. Some things to consider. Very, very important. What are your needs? What are your requirements? Are you looking for any-to-any connectivity, or are you looking to be able to isolate? Do you need to isolate because of traffic, because of workload, because of customers, regulatory or other purposes? performance and availability may differ with the various applications. And again, that's why we've got different techniques, different topologies, different technologies, 4 gig, 2 gig, 1 gig, storage over IP, storage over SONET, blocking, non-blocking, host-optimized ports, a lot of different technologies and a lot of different techniques that we can combine to meet the particular needs and requirements. Keep in mind, zoning and security as well. Strike a balance between hard and soft port zoning, very, very strict access versus being able to get things done, be able to use it. In terms of security, don't neglect physical security. Where are the switches located? Who has access to them? Who has access to the different fiber connections and port drops and connectivity things? Again, when to use which approach? Avoid overly complex, but utilize something that will be robust. There's a balance there between being too complex and being so simple that you can't get anything done. And this is where the idea of tiered access comes into play, tiered connectivity, tiered protection, tiered service. Design for scale and maintenance, plan for diagnostic test capability, including cable management. Design in redundant paths for those servers that need it, because they can also be used for maintenance and configuration purposes. And again, switch-based virtualization may be a fit. It's not necessarily a guarantee, but it might have a fit in your particular environment. So let's wrap up with our closing comments. Again, design for resilience, design for scalability, and design for flexibility. You can design these in ahead of time. It's always easier to take care of things in the design up front than it is to take care of things after the fact. Design for fault containment, such that if a component fails, you can work around that. You can isolate the fault as opposed to a fault working its way into a major outage. Apply the right tool, the right technology, and the right technique to your needs and requirements. And again, design for resilience. It's a total approach. Understand the components, your options, the different technologies and techniques. Establish a plan and execute towards it. Continually revisit that plan, revisit your needs and requirements, and revamp that plan. But have a plan and evolve towards it. At that, I'd like to pass this back to Dana.
Thank you, Greg. For more information about Scaling SANs, please visit our website at www.searchstorage.com. A final thanks to Greg and our sponsor and you for joining us today. Have a great day.